A couple of weeks ago, we had a warm spell here in Wyoming. Now you might be thinking, yeah, so what? It's spring after all. But here's two facts about spring on the Front Range of the Rocky Mountains. First, spring, as in consistently warm weather, no more snow, and the return of green leaves on the trees, tends to arrive later here in the high plains than in other places. The weather here can change fast, especially in the spring and fall. It's not unusual to be in shorts and a t-shirt one day and shoveling snow the next. Right now, my friends in Virginia are posting pictures of the cherry blossoms, and I'm still looking at brown grass, leafless trees, and snow flurries. The last snowstorm of the season generally happens in May around these parts. Second, despite fact number one, we do get stretches of warm days like we had a couple of weeks ago, spring teasers, and with those warm days, signs of actual spring, signs that I suspect a lot of people miss. For example, during the most recent warm stretch, the ground squirrels, who were hibernators, were suddenly out in large numbers. But most noticeably to me was the return of two migratory and very vocal bird species, red-winged blackbirds and western meadowlarks. And those are the birds I'm going to talk about today. I'm your host, Tim the Nature Nerd O'Hara, and this is the Dispatches from the Forest podcast. To be fair, in addition to red-winged blackbirds and meadowlarks, the robins have also returned to Wyoming. Now, I talked about robins in a previous episode, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. But you might remember that robins are not necessarily migratory like we tend to think. They often gather in flocks in the winter, sheltering together in a more localized area, usually a woodlot or forest where there's both more food in the form of seeds and berries, and shelter from the weather. Which brings me to another fact about the High Plains and the Front Range. Not a lot of native trees. It's the High Plains, historically grasslands for the most part. While some robins do overwinter here, many of them migrate south and return in the spring. And just as a reminder, American robins have one of the worst scientific names, Turdus migratorius, and they're underrated in terms of their songs. So let's talk about red-winged blackbirds. Red-winged blackbirds are slightly smaller than robins. But the one that most of us are familiar with are the males. They're the ones that are black with distinctive red shoulder patches, which is where their common name comes from. At rest, the male also has a visible pale yellow wing bar. Males less than a year old have smaller, more orange shoulder patches. But red-winged blackbirds are sexually dimorphic. Males and females look different. Female red-winged blackbirds are smaller and not as black or red. They're more of a mottled brown and black with a paler belly. Think sparrow, but bigger. Red-winged blackbirds are widespread throughout North America, from central Alaska to Newfoundland in the north to northern Costa Rica in the south. Within that range, the only places they aren't found is in the desert and high mountain ranges. Breeding populations are present somewhere in all of the lower 48 states. They generally prefer wetlands and inhabit both freshwater and saltwater marshes, especially if there's cattails. In the absence of wetlands, though, they can be found in dry upland areas, in meadows, prairies, and old fields. In most other bird species, the size and color of the male's wing spots would be how the female chooses a mate. But in red-winged blackbirds, this doesn't seem to be the case. Instead, the wing spots are used in defending territory from rival males. Males sing while displaying their shoulder patches. And they aggressively defend their territories, even swooping down on larger animals, including humans, that come too near their nesting site. For whatever reason, males with larger spots are more effective at chasing away rivals. In studies where the shoulder patches were dyed black, 64% of males lost their territories, compared to only 8% of control subjects. Red-winged blackbirds nest in loose colonies. Nests are built in cattails, rushes, grasses, sedges, or bushes. The nest is entirely built by the female over the course of 3 to 6 days and consists of a basket of grasses, sedges, and moss lined with mud and bound to the surrounding grass or branches. Nests are usually located above water, anywhere from 3 inches or 7.5 centimeters to 14 feet or 4.3 meters. Red-winged blackbirds are polygynous. Territorial males will defend up to 10 females. But apparently he doesn't do a very good job of it because females often copulate with males other than their social mate and will often lay clutches of mixed paternity. Pairs raise 2 or 3 clutches per season and build a new nest for each clutch. Clutches average 3 to 4 eggs, and chicks are born blind and naked, but develop quickly and are ready to leave the nest about 2 weeks after hatching. Like many other birds, red-winged blackbirds are omnivores. They eat primarily plant material, including seeds, waste grain, and berries when they're in season. But about 25% of their diet, more during the breeding season, consists of animal matter, like insects, which they pick off plants or catch in flight. Also carrion, frogs, snails, and spiders. In the southern part of their range, they're present year-round, but northern populations, kind of like retirees with an RV, head south to spend the winter in the southern United States and Mexico. But interestingly, they migrate in gender-specific flocks. In the spring, males head north first. In the fall, females leave first, up to a month before the males, and tend to migrate farther. Banded red-winged blackbirds that breed in the Great Lakes region have been recorded migrating the farthest, flying around 750 miles, or 1,200 kilometers, between their breeding grounds and winter grounds. At a top speed of 30 miles an hour, or 48 kilometers an hour, and flying only during daylight hours, this can take several days or even weeks. Now, since they tend to gather in such large numbers and are, in fact, one of the most numerous birds in North America, their mere presence and natural behavior is enough to influence the environment in a visible way. Large flocks can be devastating to crops. In North America, the damage to corn crops by red-winged blackbirds increased since the late 1960s. Probably because of the increase in area used for grain production and the corresponding reduction of small areas with stubble, hay fields, and uncultivated land, which in turn only made the blackbird more dependent on corn to survive. Although it seems that males do more damage than females. In some studies, corn accounted for 30 to 75% of the male's diet and only 6 to 9% of the female's. But they can also be beneficial for agriculture, consuming pest insects and weed seeds. It's estimated that the 8 million red-winged blackbirds nesting in Ohio consume about 12 million pounds, or 5.4 million kilograms, of insects annually, many of which are agricultural pests themselves. If you view it strictly from an economic standpoint, the damage they do is higher than the benefit they provide. But I think of it as payment for organic pest control. Red-winged blackbirds are also an important source of food for other animals like raccoons and mink, and populations that breed and rest in swamps can cushion the effect of predation on duck species and other animals. Okay, now let's turn our attention to the meadowlark, specifically the western meadowlark, because, well, there's 8 species of meadowlark, 5 red-breasted species in South America, and 3 yellow-breasted species in North America. The western meadowlark is the one that lives here in Wyoming. Now, despite having the word lark in their name, they're not actually larks, which are a different scientific family. Instead, meadowlarks are in the Icteridae, or New World blackbird, family, making them cousins of the red-winged blackbirds that I just talked about. So, while we're on the subject of names, the western meadowlark's scientific name is Stellurna neglecta, given to it by John James Audubon in 1844. The word neglecta translates from Latin basically as neglected, ignored, or overlooked. According to Audubon, he chose this because while Lewis and Clark mentioned yellow larks in their journals, the species hadn't been formally described. Well, they can't claim to be overlooked anymore because not only are they the state bird here in Wyoming, They're also the state bird of Montana, Nebraska, Kansas, Oregon, and North Dakota. Like their red-winged icterid cousins, western meadowlarks are slightly smaller than robins. They have yellow underparts with a black V on the breast and white flanks streaked with black. Their upper parts are mostly brown and also have black streaks. Their heads are striped with light brown and black bands, and they have long pointed bills. Western meadowlarks are found across central and western North America, as far south as northern Mexico, and as far north as central Canada. They breed in grasslands, prairies, pastures, and abandoned fields. They primarily eat insects, and in fact have been introduced in Hawaii as a form of natural pest control, but they'll also eat seeds and berries if they're available. They forage either on the ground or in low vegetation, sometimes probing with their bills. Meadowlarks nest on the ground, and a male's territory may include one or more nesting females. Nests are built by the female soon after she arrives on the breeding grounds. The nest is placed in a concealed location on the ground and ranges from a simple cup to a partially roofed structure with a runway extending from the entrance. The finished nest is 7 to 8 inches across and 2 to 3 inches deep. As you might imagine, mowing or agricultural operations pose a risk to nesting meadowlarks. Eggs are laid one a day for 5 to 6 days, and incubation doesn't start until the last egg is laid. Incubation is done by the female alone for about 2 weeks, and the eggs usually hatch over the course of 1 to 2 days. Again, chicks are born featherless and don't open their eyes for the first 4 days. That said, they leave the nest at 10 to 12 days old, even though it'll be another 10 days or so until they're capable of sustained flight. Chicks get parental care until this time and are fed exclusively insects, which the father may bring to the nest, but they're fed to the chicks by the mother. Once the first brood is independent, a second brood is usually attempted. Like their blackbird cousins, western meadowlarks can be permanent residents in much of their range, but here in Wyoming and farther north, they're partially migratory. Cheyenne is, in fact, very close to the northern edge of their year-round range, but not quite there. Meadowlarks from here may head as far south as northern Mexico for the winter. So it was pretty obvious to me when I noticed them out and singing again a couple weeks ago. In fact, there's a saying that goes, "Spring has sprung when the meadowlark has sung." Of course, like I said at the beginning, spring weather here is highly variable, and there's also an old joke about the seasons here including Fool's Spring, Second Winter, Spring of Deception, and Winter's Revenge, just to name a few, and all of which come before actual spring. So if spring has sprung when the meadowlark has sung, just what does a meadowlark sound like? Well, male western meadowlarks have a playlist of 10 to 12 songs, which is nothing compared to the 50 to 100 song variants of the eastern meadowlark. It's still pretty impressive, and the meadowlark's songs are used for different purposes. Some songs are in response to an intruder. When chasing competing males or potential mates, male western meadowlarks give a hurried, excited flight song that consists of short-spaced whistles and warbles. The most common call is described as a low bell-like pluck, which they use both when disturbed and during courtship and territorial displays. Female western meadowlarks give a soft rattle during courtship and egg laying and a low-intensity TTT call when building nests and laying eggs. After leaving the nest, young birds give a simple high-pitched location call for the first few weeks, which is replaced by a wheat note once they're independent. Adults also use this wheat note when migrating. Here are just a few examples of western meadowlark songs. And on those notes, literally, I'll close out this episode. Thank you for listening. Remember to click on that like button and subscribe to the podcast. You can leave me a comment if you have one too. I'd love to hear from you. If you enjoy the podcast, spread the word. If you want to support the podcast, check out our Patreon page and consider becoming a patron. Subscriptions start at just $5 a month, and after 3 months, you get some cool merchandise. I'm also planning to offer a webinar in the very near future. Patrons at any level will automatically be registered. You can find all the information at patreon.com/dispatchesfromtheforest. If you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can do that through PayPal. dispatchesfromtheforest@gmail.com is my PayPal address and also my email address. You're welcome to use that to send me any questions, comments, or suggestions for either future episodes or the webinar. What do you want to learn about? Let me know. Check out the Dispatches from the Forest merch store at cafepress.com/dispatchesfromtheforest. Lots and lots and lots of options there. Go see for yourself. For additional content, follow Dispatches from the Forest on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. I'm your host, Tim the Nature Nerd O'Hara, reminding you to go outside and get dirty. The Dispatches from the Forest podcast is a production of Dispatches from the Forest and may not be used or rebroadcast, whole or in part, without express written permission.